Hey folks, my name is Tim. Welcome to The Table, the podcast edition. The Table is a community that exists to make room to explore what we believe. What you're about to hear is the podcast edit of something that we do together in person. We just call it the Talky Bit. We're sharing it with you in the hope that it can be a positive contribution and a catalyst for your own exploration, or perhaps something that you share with somebody else you know is exploring what they believe to support and encourage them. In our experience, exploring what you believe can be hard work, exciting, encouraging, but also challenging. And we don't think that anyone should have to do that alone. On a perhaps more personal note, I don't believe that we do it best alone. I think we do it best together with others. We're able to do this work because of the generous support of donors both within and beyond the local community. If you want to contribute to keeping it going, you can find information about how to do that at thetablewinnipeg.com under the Giving tab. Thanks for dropping by. Welcome to the Talky Bit. I'll do what I've done other weeks here with this. We have very little time, so I'm going to really motor along on this. But just a quick review, we talked about factors that influence belief change as part of the first week of this, things like new information and experiences, changing environments, social influence, emotional and values-based factors, things that we feel or that assail or reinforce values that we have. And then we've been talking about how to change beliefs. And the first thing we talked about there was this idea that we need to identify our beliefs. And that's a big process. And so we spent a bunch of time on that because it's a lot of work. And it has some really practical tasks in it, things like keeping a diary so that we can start to name our automatic thoughts and sort of go, I never thought about this thought. So we can actually start to think about those things and connect them to what we believe, especially perhaps most powerfully. And I don't think we have to be, you know, Jungian to go here, but it might not hurt. But especially the unconscious beliefs and the power of the things that we believe that we've never thought about as beliefs and how significant that is in that process. And then we talked about this idea of challenging our beliefs, and that's where we left off last week. And so I want to get into this notion of the next step in this process of consciously changing our beliefs being a process where we're seeking new perspectives. And the short version of this is that seeking new perspectives, really at the core of it, are sort of practical things like talking to people that hold different views, engaging with various sources to just gain new insight on whatever the belief is that we're thinking about. So basically, my mom would have called this looking for trouble. Karen, in the front row, for those of you who don't know, this is my youngest sister, youngest sibling, Karen. So that hence the deeper laugh about mom saying, you can hear her voice, right? So yeah, saying that, yeah. And she would probably discourage it. Not because she, you know. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
She didn't like it.
Yeah, that's right. That's interesting means I'm really trying hard to be polite about something that I want to say, you just shouldn't do that. I want to illustrate this aspect from what might feel like a bit of a complex perspective, maybe even a confounding, but it's a perspective I've encountered a few times. However, it's also outside of my lived experience and for reasons that I think will make sense shortly. So these experiences that I'm kind of bundling together have been really powerful and impactful. I think they can have value for everyone, but they do come from cultural contexts that aren't mine. So I want to do this with real care. What I'm going to share in the interest of protecting the confidentiality of those that have trusted me with their stories is an amalgamation of many stories. It's a story type, as distinct from an individual's story. But over and over, lots of my work outside of my work with the table is in contexts where I'm the non-Indigenous person in a room full of Indigenous folks. And over and over, I've had conversations. I learned so much in those rooms. I've talked with people whose beliefs are a blend of Indigenous and Christian. I mean, colonization, in a word. But also profound personal beliefs that have survived that process somehow. And anyway, there's a mystery there for me all on its own. But they often stand in this fairly common story of an Indigenous person who was raised by their kukum, or in different cultures, different words, but by their grandmother, somebody who was both Indigenous and a committed Christian and who took them to church regularly as a child. And so the stuff gets in there in the formative stages, and it gets in there deep. And the colonial themes of those stories are not hidden. They're in plain view. I'm just not going to focus on those today. And there is, of course, a lifetime of work and learning residing in those spaces. It's just not where I'm headed at the moment with this illustration. So many of these folks grew up sort of swimming in both those systems of belief And if we sort of stay with that swimming image for a moment, they're drenched in the waters of both. And they know something about how to swim in both, and it doesn't necessarily feel odd to them. When I'm hearing these stories, there's a part of me that's just internally, at least, I hope it doesn't make it to the outside. I'm trying very hard to just be present to what I'm hearing. But internally, there is a loud monkey in there kind of going, how do you even do that? Because I don't think I could. And I don't, it's not my story, so I don't need to. But it's baffling to me. And I don't want to overtax the metaphor here, but as a visual person, which I am to no small degree, the image that comes to mind is, you know, some of those drone shots that you see sometimes where freshwater and saltwater meet, and they have different, they're reflecting light differently because of what the sediment or the, anyway, we won't have to get into the science here, but you can see the different blues or the, right, and you can sort of see where they come together, and then there's this new thing that happens. When I think about those pictures, and I think about these stories, I think, from the vantage point of the drone, you can see the different hues and textures of those two sources, but if you were swimming in them, good luck telling where one stops and where the other one starts. So when these folks, whose stories I'm thinking of here, are in crisis, they sometimes turn to both systems, to both cultures, to rituals from both traditions and practices. But when I press in with some deeper exploration of what they know about their own Christian beliefs, which is the lane in the conversation where I'm, if I'm an expert in any part of that conversation, that would be the part. When I press into that, I often discover that they really don't know very much about the background of those beliefs. The beliefs are resonant and lively for them. They're cherished. This doesn't reduce the value of those beliefs, but they don't stand on anything very substantial if they were to be examined. They have been given very little background on this. They know what they heard in church or from the person who raised them, and that's the shape the story has. Now, on one level, there's nothing unusual about that. Many of us, regardless of our cultural background or context, could say the same. We weren't encouraged to explore what we were being taught, but to just accept it. In fact, some of us can easily recall, some of us in the room have told stories about this. We can recall being actively discouraged from exploring the beliefs we were being taught, and in some cases being told that exploring what we were being taught threatened our immortal souls, or at least sort of carried the threat, implicit or explicit, of being sidelined or ostracized by the community in which we were being formed. Looking for trouble. Don't do it. And some of the particular stories that I'm thinking of, in this instance, one of the things that seems truly awful to me is that folks were being deliberately kept away from stories within even that Christian tradition that are complicated, that are rich with potential meaning, but they're tricky to navigate. They're the kind of stories that might raise some sticky questions about the tradition in which you're being formed. They might both provoke questions and also inform questions. In one instance, when I mentioned in a conversation with somebody where this was sort of the general frame, I mentioned an Old Testament story that I thought might be a helpful one to them given what they were wrestling with. And the person said, quote, oh, I don't know much about that old part. Again, not unusual, right? That's, if you want to divide it by traditions, that's the Hebrew tradition, and the Judeo-Christian tradition stands on it, but isn't it? Despite many, many hundreds of years of attempts to make it. It's co-opting, I would argue, when we do that. The thing is, it's also a story about how each of us gets to wrestle with the divine for ourselves, that particular story, and about how it can be pretty hard to tell where physical reality stops and spiritual reality starts. And so I was sharing a story with this person in an attempt to sort of leverage religion as a means of control or of cultural assimilation in reverse. It's like I wanted to share this story to kind of try to undo some of that, because this is exactly the kind of story that if I was trying to control the shape of someone's belief, this is exactly the kind of story I wouldn't want people to know. I wouldn't want them to be aware of it. I won't get the quote from the lyric right, but there's a Josh Ritter song that keeps popping up in the singers in our household, where he talks about this young woman from the deep south who goes away to Bible school and learns a little bit about all the things he didn't want you to know anything about. And he lists a bunch of stories like Samson and Delilah and, you know, whatever, right? And she comes back home and she's like, I went away to get kind of grounded in fundamentalism. What I realized is I got to own my own sexuality, and I'm back, baby. You know, and just like, and this is good. That Adam and Eve story, Eve bit the apple, and it was sweet. You know, so just, you know, when we learn things, they raise questions, and sometimes that messes with the system, right? Now, I have no way of actually knowing what the motives might have been for the religious authorities in those stories that were being shared with me. Those are not facts. But what I was hearing through my filters, for sure through my filters, but what I was hearing given those givens were stories about an overall environment that discouraged this part of the process, that discouraged the act of seeking or of new or other, and in this case, ancient perspectives. And so here we have someone in an instance that I'm thinking of sort of actively in the moment, whose indigenous spirituality is sort of being discovered, you know, as an adult person, but whose childhood spirituality was deeply informed by this exploration-limited version of Christianity. It's hardly, even just, if that was the only variable, and it wasn't, even that would be enough to create a crisis around belief, right? So I know that's a long way around, and the uniquely indigenous aspects of it might not be your story or mine, but some of the themes I think cross over. One of those themes is that don't ask is built into a lot of systems that form us as persons. And choosing to seek out other perspectives, which is what we're talking about, in case you forgot, in all of that storytelling, seeking out other perspectives actively challenges the don't ask aspect of those systems. So when you challenge a system, any system, it's going to be disruptive for the challenger and for the others who are operating in the system. And if there are people in the system for whom that's a very reassuring system, and you start to challenge the system, those relationships are going to hit a bump, odds are. So this is not easy stuff. It's going to be uncomfortable, and it might even fiddle with some of these big systems in our lives, family, relationships, maybe employment. The ripples can go pretty far from some of this stuff. So the magnitude of some of these things is one of the reasons why I would say that, as we've called the series, that this isn't for everyone at every time. And it isn't even for everyone at any time. Frankly, it's not even safe to explore what you believe for everyone. What comes to mind in the moment is this person that you shared about, Brent, saying it's not worth it. It's a choice. It's fully a choice. We need to remember that. However, not but, however or and would be better, it is also important to not put this exploration off, especially if the little voice inside of us that says now it's time to do the work is starting to make a lot of noise. And perhaps also just a brief thought about that engage with new sources idea that I mentioned when I introduced this idea. We live in a world of sources unlike any other period in history. And one of the things that makes this period unique, I think, is that we have access to pretty much endless information that is functionally untethered from relationships, community, ritual, earth, these big grounding things for us as humans. It's just information. There it is. I typed it into the search bar and I got an AI summary that's untethered. It's disconnected from the things that are most profoundly human. It doesn't mean it's not valuable. We just need to treat it for what it is. And one of the implications of that is that when we set off to explore other perspectives, I think we're vulnerable to ideas that don't work especially well in any context where community matters. I think there's a category of information that's uniquely vulnerable there. Beliefs that focus predominantly on the individual are, I think, particularly fragile, at least if we care to engage with others in a more meaningful and complex ways. And we touched on this morning, that when we talked about that tension between solitude and society, right? This being alone and being social. If we're okay with living in our bubbles, this is less of a factor. If we want to live as well as possible with others, all of whom will be different from us, then it's a different matter. So it's a whole topic unto itself, of course, but I think worth keeping in view in this. So that's that aspect. That's actively or seeking new perspectives. And then the next piece here is actively replacing beliefs. To intentionally adopt new beliefs and put them into practice is, this is the part where we start to switch to verbs. This is about doing. It can be done gradually, but ideally, in some ways, if possible, it's nice to test a large chunk of a belief system at once instead of sort of nibbling. Not always possible, but what's good about that, I think, is that we get, let me use a food analogy. Someone that I know is really struggling with their mobility, and one of the things they're exploring is diet, right? And one of the people that they're consulting about that, sort of at a distance, is another person who's had similar issues in their life and in their experience, who's basically like, well, I figured I could sort of eliminate dairy and try that. I could eliminate gluten and try that. I could just go on a paleo diet and eliminate everything except for this, and I'd test them all at once. And whether that's advisable or not is contextual, obviously. But the notion that testing a big chunk accomplishes certain things in a more efficient way, that also applies here with some of those same caveats, is that it's not always safe or desirable. But there is some merit there. To some of us, this idea of testing a belief all by itself might sound like nonsense. How do you even do that? And as I mentioned, this is about actions. It's about doing what we believe. And I don't want to speak for anyone else at this juncture, but I can honestly say that for me, this is consistently the hardest part. It is much easier to say, I believe, than it is to do, I believe. Keeping a belief in the realm of ideas, challenging on its own for sure, but different than kind of going, what are the lived implications of this? I'm going to do those. And I'm going to try to do them with some consistency so that the test actually has some, I get a meaningful feedback loop from this. I'm engaged enough with it that it changes something about my behavior. In the history of the Christian tradition, a noteworthy example of this would be Francis of Assisi, so this famous Italian mystic, poet, Catholic friar, founds the religious order of the Franciscans eventually, but he's inspired to, as part of his story, to lead this life of poverty because of his faith, his Christian faith. But he's a rich kid, and so he chucks all of that. He disavows his wealth and his cultural status. He becomes a beggar. He becomes an itinerant preacher. Lots of ways to consider the story, but when it comes to this notion of testing what you believe, he's an example worth considering. He, as part of his youthful hubris, he goes off to war seeking glory. And within the first year on the battlefield, he's taken prisoner, and he spends the balance of that particular conflict as a prisoner of war, and he gets really, really sick during that internment. And it causes him to reevaluate. He decides he's going to live different. But he comes back, and he comes back to his father's house, to wealth and privilege, and he just like falls right back into it, right? And it takes him about 3 years, 2 or 3 years in that context to kind of pull his way back to that realization and go, no, what this looks like if I actually test it is it looks like giving away all the profits from the day at the market to the beggar that I met in the street, handing over his silk merchant was his dad's business, giving away all the silk that I have sort of say over. Dad was not happy, among other things. And just in one version of the story, taking off my fine clothing and just walking out of the market naked to face the world. That's kind of an egregious example in some ways in its detail. But one of the things that's fascinating about it is that this is the person who founds the Franciscan order, which to this day remains, for those of us who kind of tilt left, at least, kind of an appealing set of ideals within Catholicism in many ways. Still continue to sort of work to affect positive change in many parts of the world. That's sort of what that order does. So the ripples from this choice were enormous. I don't think there's any testimonial quite as convincing as a person who actually tries to live in ways that are consistent with what they say that they believe. They don't have to do it perfectly, but it does help if they're doing it sincerely. And if we see engagement, we see action. Also, there's a part of this that's simply pragmatic. Testing what we say we believe or are considering adopting as personal beliefs tends to reveal in fairly practical ways whether a belief works for us or not. And that's part of what this is about. The next aspect of this sounds easy in a sentence, right? Be open-minded. You've heard me use this phrase before. It's a dear idea to me. It's a perennial challenge to me. But I would say that another way to think about be open-minded is cultivate curiosity. And what I like about cultivate curiosity as opposed to be open-minded just sounds like a binary, right? Be open-minded, be closed-minded. It's like a light switch way of articulating this. Cultivate curiosity immediately tosses us into an organic metaphor with the notion of cultivation. How do we create the conditions in our own lives and in the lives of those around us for curiosity to thrive? Thich Nhat Hanh comes to mind. You know, if you plant lettuce and it's not doing well, don't blame the lettuce. Like, check and see if it's getting enough light, if it's being watered, or make the conditions for it to thrive. But don't blame the lettuce. And cultivating curiosity is kind of like that. There are choices we can make that cause curiosity to be in healthier repair in our lives. So cultivating a willingness to consider different perspectives is part of being curious. So it's not a light switch again. It's cultivation. It's practice. Even when those different perspectives might contradict our current views. So what we're trying to do here, if we want to contrast with curiosity, is live in a space that is fluid as distinct from a space that is more rigid. So that's how I would use the word judgment here, as opposed to curiosity, right? Judgment tends to have a rigidity about it. It's a past tense word as I'm using it. We need to also use good judgment. So the word behaves more than one way. But curiosity is a fluid state, and as a result, it fits into the nooks and crannies and sometimes the dusty corners of our life of belief. And judgment, because of its stasis, its rigidity, doesn't encourage us necessarily to bend and flex and test. So to cultivate curiosity, I would say, is to face things that make us uncomfortable or challenge our current beliefs or narratives with a stance that says, I know I already have a narrative that explains this, and aren't those lovely, right? And we need them. I already have a narrative that explains this or claims to explain this, but what else might what I'm seeing here mean? What, when I see behavior in someone that I don't comprehend or can't apprehend, I'll have a story for that fairly quickly, generally speaking. That's one of the ways we navigate, right? I'll have an explanation for it that satisfies me. Important. Also, never the whole story. How could it be? That would mean I would have to know what that person's experience and perspective was for that to be the case. And I can't know that. Even when they share it with me, which is far better than me guessing about it, it's still partial, isn't it? So what curiosity does is it reminds me to ask that question, what else might what I'm seeing here as behavior, what else might that mean? And beyond that, who could I ask about this who might see it differently than I do? What source can my curiosity take me toward in exploring this? And beyond that, what is the context of this other source that I'm seeking, this other person and their experience? Do they have ways of living out, of practicing what they believe in the company of others that I can observe in a curious and non-judgmental way for the purposes of considering the implications of whatever belief it is that they espouse? There was a lot in that sentence, and I said it really fast. Short version, who do I know that I can ask about this, who lives different than me and can articulate why they live the way that they live? That's part of the testing, isn't it? And I'm not testing it to dismiss it. I'm testing it in this instance. I'm testing it because of my curiosity about it. Because I have an unanswered question about what else might this mean. Last one, and this takes us full circle. Engage in self-reflection. Sort of restarts the loop, right? This is where we started, if you remember. When we talked about deliberately changing your beliefs, we started with taking the time to reflect on what we already believe or claim to believe. And in some ways, that's what closes the loop. And this set of ideas can feel open-minded, potentially endless, like an infinite loop. Yes, absolutely. And that points me to the last idea that I want to leave us with. And all of this, from my perspective, is predicated on the notion that exploring what we believe is, in itself, a way of interacting with, a way of believing something about beliefs. To be willing to explore what we believe is a perspective on belief. And the notion there is that beliefs are at their best, are at their most healthy, their most helpful, their most believable and livable when we don't think of them as static, when we think of them as dynamic. I think that's pinned to the observation that as persons we're not static, nor is our experience static. It's all dynamic. It's all fluid. It's all moving all the time. Is that in itself disconcerting and disquieting? Yes, it is. I don't think we get to choose about that. I think that's gravity, so to speak, for us. We change, our context changes, our lived experiences change, and those things change us, and so on. Loop. Our human context is dynamic, and our beliefs, I think, will be kept in the best possible repair if we treat them as dynamic as well. This doesn't make them less precious or important, but we hold them differently when we understand them to be dynamic than we do when we understand them to be static. So, from that vantage point at least, I would say, let's keep on exploring what we believe together. Peace.